then sometimes when you can't see well, you have to put the contacts on, you have to put your reading glasses to help the contacts. We'll see.
Then you turn the light on.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to be here. I do want to welcome the visitors. I think when you visit a congregation, you don't appreciate how encouraging you are. So anytime we look in the audience, we see new people here, it makes us feel good. And even people that visit us on a regular basis, it's so wonderful to see you there, see you here, and hopefully what we do here is edifying. As you know, Philip is not feeling good this morning. He asked me to fill in for him. Certainly you won't get the quality that you normally get from Philip, but we'll do our best. There's a story. It's about a man who was in a city, and he wasn't a very nice person. He was wicked. He was rebellious. But he owned a store, and he figured that he could get more customers if people thought he was a Christian. So he identified a country store on the outskirts of town. And the truth of the matter is, this guy was not a good person. He was wicked, he was devious, and he had never, ever been a member of a church before. So anyway, the next Sunday he goes to this country church, and he comes forward at the proper time, and he tells them that he didn't have any gross sin in his life, and he told them that he had been brought up in the church, and they believed him, and they accepted him as a member. He got home after that and was kind of bragging to his wife that he had placed membership at this church. And his wife, who was a fairly religious person, she got upset. She said, "How could you be such a hypocrite and go and tell those people that? And what you need to do is next Sunday, you need to go back to the congregation and tell them the truth." She was amazed when her husband actually bought into this and promised to do what he told her to do. So the next morning, he goes back to his church. He comes up front at the proper time, and he tells them that he had been dishonest, that he was not a good person, he was an alcoholic, he had all this sin in his life, and he also told them he was a liar. Well, when this happened, the church immediately revoked his membership. Walking to the door, and he left. And as he was walking down the steps, he kind of scratched his head and said, "You know, I don't understand those church people. When I lied, they liked me. They took me in. And when I told them the truth, they kicked me out." Well, Jesus told a story of two men that were somewhat in a similar type situation, but with two different results. One man thought that he could talk himself into heaven, and he couldn't do that. And one man acted like he wanted to talk himself out of heaven, and he didn't do that either. So we're going to be talking today about the parable of the Pharisee and the publican. And if you want to, again, turn your Bibles to Luke 18. We'll start with verse 9. "And he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus within himself. He said, 'God, I thank you that I am not like the other men, like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And the tax collector standing afar would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven. He beat on his breast and said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And then Jesus says in verse 14, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Is there a better verse in the world than that? Is there not a better verse that we should look at ourselves and judge ourselves by? And so the first thing we want to do with parable, of course, is we want to consider who he was talking to at that time. But we today, in this congregation, we also should be asking ourselves, is he talking to me? So often we sit in the pews, and the preacher gets up there and talks about something, and it kind of goes over our head because we know he ain't talking to me. So let's take a look at, let's ask ourselves some questions to see whether or not he's talking about each and every one of us. Do you ever look at people who don't go to church and feel that you're automatically better than them because you do go? If that's the case, this parable might be talking to you. What about people who maybe have gotten on the wrong side of the law, criminal record, been in prison? You think you're better than those people? Maybe this parable is for you. Maybe, you know, we talked about marriage this morning. Maybe you know somebody who's been divorced and you look down upon that person simply because of that. And you think you're better than them. Maybe this parable is about you. And in general, if there ever was any situation where you turned down your nose at somebody for any reason and you automatically thought you were better than that person just because of that, this parable might be something that you might want to consider. Because I promise you that all of us have thought ourselves better than other people at different times. I can guarantee you. And what this parable says is that we've often thought that we could impress God just by being who we are. And what this parable tells us is what really impresses God and what really doesn't. So let's take a look at that. There are some things that are pretty evident in this parable. First, it identifies the place that we go to worship. Now, the publican and the Pharisee both came to the temple. Today, we have the church that we come to worship. Because religious people go to church, right? Well, we hope so. And the apostle, the great apostle, says that we should not forsake the assembly of people coming together. And I think the other thing is because we don't want to concentrate on just coming here and looking good. I think the connotation is we ought to be doing some things, good deeds outside the church. So that we are just not Christians on Sunday morning or Sunday evening or Wednesday night. So it tells us that these two men went up to the temple. Now the other thing that we learned is something about some religious practices. So when they went up to the temple, the next question you might want to ask is, why did they go up to the temple? For what reason? If you consider what the Pharisee said, you might wonder what he came up there for. It wasn't to pray, as we understand prayer. Maybe it was to boast. Because if you take a look at what the Pharisee said, there's nothing in there where he was confessing that I've done some things that I should not have done. There's nothing in there where he was petitioning for a pardon. There's nothing in there where he was asking God for grace to help him through some hard times. It was basically he was giving an evaluation of his performance, his life. What does he say? He says that it says the Pharisee stood and prayed thus within himself, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this publican. I almost was listening for a standing ovation because he obviously was doing a great performance. I almost expected somebody to put a gold medal around his neck and his national anthem to start playing. Because he obviously was putting on a performance. Is it bad to be thankful that you are not a bad person? An extortioner, an adulterer? Of course not. But for any good things that we can say, who do we owe it to? Of course, we owe it to God. Is there anything in the in the Pharisees' prayer that thanked God for making him like he was? Or is he saying basically, I did it all myself? The attitude of the Pharisee was based on himself. Self-trust, self-righteousness, and contempt. And if you go back up to verse 9, where it says that Jesus spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Does that describe exactly what point Jesus was trying to make? The standard that the Pharisee judged righteousness and unrighteousness was external. And it was based on outward deeds rather than the person's heart. The Pharisee judged himself in terms by which society found unacceptable, not the things that really matter to God. To put it differently, he looked at things that society would consider to be crimes, swindling people, robbing people, okay, unjustness. Okay, being a evil person like a tax collector. That's what he judged his righteousness on. And any time we decide to judge our righteousness on what we would consider crooks in our society, then we are not basing it on the right thing. The standard that he used was more comparative rather than absolute. Because the Bible, God's law is absolute. So he should have been basing himself on God's law rather than comparing himself to the guy standing over there to the side, the publican. He was righteous simply because he considered himself better than that person over there. And anytime we do that, we come to the wrong conclusion. He said, I fast twice a week. Now, is there anything wrong with fasting? No, there's nothing wrong with fasting. Because Jesus says that that when you fast, because he knew that some of his disciples would be fasting. The Apostle Paul says, and fasting often. So there's nothing inherently wrong with fasting. And he also said, you know, I give tithes of everything I possess. So there's nothing wrong with that. So what exactly is the problem then with what the Pharisee said? He thought himself righteous simply because of the way that he felt he lived. And that what he did was going to make him righteous. But we cannot trust in simply what we do here in this life here. We should trust in God. So there is So the point of this parable, I think, one of the points of this parable is not that this man wasn't that bad. The point is, no matter what he did, he could never be good. So Jesus said that when these two people, these two men left, they left and they went down to their houses. But the results of them, what they did was different. He said about the Pharisee, he said, I tell you, this man that went down to the house was justified rather than the other. And the other is the Pharisee. The Pharisee, even though he came there thinking he had everything under control, Jesus said he left there unjustified. But what about the publican? Is he the poster child of what we ought to be looking like? How we ought to be acting? Well, let's take a look at the publican. The publican was standing afar. He was in the outward court, and he obviously didn't feel he was good enough to go to the Holy of Holies, to get close to that. So he stood off afar, and he felt so self-conscious. He could not look heavenly upward because he knew that where God's throne was. He could not even attempt to approach the throne of God. It says that he beat himself on the chest. Now, did he lay? He obviously felt he was unworthy. Did he lay the blame for his unworthiness on a lot of other people? Did he blame it on his parents? We all know that if people turn out badly, it's the parents' fault. Did he bring it up on his background? He said, you know, if I would have been brought up differently, in better situations, I would not have turned out like this. Did he blame it on society? You know what? I'm just always being persecuted by society. Or did he blame it even on the political parties? You know, the Democrats and the Republicans, because the whole world is bad because of them. Of course he did not. He blames it all on his own wicked heart. Okay? The things that he's done in his body. And he says, quite simply, he says, God be merciful to me, a sinner. Now, what is he a sinner of? Well, if you take a look at the context here, he could have been a sinner by birth, a sinner by thought, by word, by deed, by all aspects of his person, by what he's done. He would be a sinner that would have no hope. He didn't have anything in him that was good. And that's maybe why he said simply, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. He's not going to rely on whether or not he's fasted. He's not going to rely on whether or not he tithes or anything that he could do. He's not boasting that he wasn't an extortioner, he wasn't unjust, that he wasn't an adulterer, any of those. And he may or may not have done those crimes. But simply he says, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. So he went up to pray. And I think if you take a look at what he did, you could simply call that a prayer. Simple as that. And Jesus says, I tell you that this man, this publican, this poor, pitiful, sinful man, he says, went down to his house justified in the sight of God rather than the other. And then he says, for everyone that exalted himself shall be abased, and he that humbled himself shall be exalted. That's an interesting text there. It would be exactly the opposite of how we look upon ourselves here tonight. And notice he says, everyone. It doesn't matter whether you are a male or female. It doesn't matter whether you're young or old, whether you're high or low, whether you're rich or poor, because we know that God is not a respecter of persons. Let me say that again. God doesn't respect how much money you have. He doesn't respect what type of position you have. He doesn't respect whether you are one of the greatest entertainers in the world. God doesn't, that doesn't matter to him. He says basically, if you are going to call yourself, you will be debased. You will not be justified as this Pharisee was. Not justified. Let me go over 4 points that I want to make, and then the lesson will be yours. So what main 4 points do we get from this parable? Now, point number one, humility is so very important. It's so important that it doesn't matter how good the Pharisee was. If he didn't have it, he couldn't be justified before God. It's so important that no matter how bad the publican was, if he had it, he had a chance to be justified before God. We often forget that Jesus, Son of God, our Savior, the great I Am, he left heaven to come down here. And when he was born, he could have been born in the grandest palace that we can imagine, but he chose to be born in a manger with animals. He could have picked as his followers the highest ranking officials in the land. Who did he pick? Fishermen and publicans. Okay? And who received his message? It was the common folks. Because the Jewish leaders plotted to kill him. Where did he preach from? Did he preach on a grand stage with lights and revolving and all that sort of thing? His most famous sermon was on a mountainside. And finally, his central message was really to the low and the poor people, not to the high and mighty. So humility is very important if you want to be justified before God. Point number two. It teaches the vanity and the emptiness of self-righteousness. We are all sinners. Now certainly the Pharisee could brag that he wasn't guilty of any gross sins, and that may be true, but when you brag about that, you only highlight what your real sins are. The Apostle Paul said in Romans 3:10, it says that there is none righteous. No, not one. He also said in Romans 3:23, a verse that we all know, that we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And then there's a passage in Psalms 64:6, that talks about human righteousness in terms of polluted garments. That's in the American Standard. The King James says righteousness is as filthy rags. So when you think that you are so great and that God should be happy to have you as one of his children, think about your righteousness in those terms. Point number three, it teaches us how to pray. It says that sometimes a short prayer is more effective than alarming. And if you go back to the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus talked about having long prayers full of empty phrases and vain repetitions. This prayer here that the publican gave that was accepted by God, how many words did it have in it? God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I don't know about new math, but I count 7 words. Think what people would think if we got up here and prayed 7 words. It doesn't matter how many words you pray. It matters what you pray. This parable also tells us with prayer, it tells us who the prayer should be directed to. The Pharisee directed it to himself and to his audience. God says that the prayer should be directed upward to him. And then point number 4. It tells us who the truly great people are in this world. It is he who is humble. It's not the great athletes that you might be looking at the TV this week and the next few weeks. Those are not the great heroes. The great heroes are the people who are humble, who walk in godly fear, and who approach the throne of God with their head bowed. Maybe the great poet Shakespeare got it right in his masterpiece, Macbeth. He talks about life. He says that life is like a walking shadow, and that we are only poor players. We're actors, and each of us have an hour on the stage, and then we are heard from no more. He says that life is a tale that is told by an idiot, that is full of sound and fury, but it signifies, in the end, it signifies nothing. And I think that's a good description of what life here on earth is. It's the nothingness will occur if you are outside of Christ. Simple as that. The reason that we're here is so that we can be acceptable to God and that we can show him that we are fit to be with him throughout eternity. So as I close and as I get ready to present the invitation to you, consider how empty this life is without Christ. And if you are one of those who have not named Christ as your Savior and who has not done the things that you need to do to become a child of God, then your life is indeed empty. And you may consider yourself similar to the publican, or you may consider yourself like the Pharisees. But they do have one thing in common, and that is they both need Christ. And so do you. So if you find that you're somebody who's out of duty to himself and to God, you have that opportunity to come forward as we stand and sing.